Hey, this podcast replay, it's brought to you by Sports Grill with 7 great locations. Check out the Bird Road and Miami Lakes locations. Sports Grill is the home to the legendary Sports Grilled Wings, and catch our Dolphins pre- and post-game shows at the Miami Lakes and Bird Road locations for the 2021 season.
Folks, first of all, don't forget to smash the like button. It is very important to smash that like button while you're watching the podcast or here on YouTube. Very, very important. All right. How are you doing, sir? How are you feeling? You feeling closer to 100% already?
About 99.2, I would say. A little bit of low. Throat scratching, but pretty good overall. Thank you.
All right. That's close enough. We'll take that for now. Are you going to go see the Psychedelic Furs tonight at Revolution Live?
Oh, Love My Way. I am not, but Love My Way. I love that song. Don't know a ton of their work, but I like that one. There are a couple of other songs of theirs that I know I like. And
Pretty in Pink, Heartbreak Beat. Yeah. Come on,
man. It's a great venue too. It's a great venue also.
Yes. Spent many nights at Backstreets back in the day when that was Backstreets. But anyway, those are other times, long, long time ago. All right, let's get into this. First of all, we all saw the press conference. And the question I have is, I understand that he doesn't want to squash I understand that he doesn't want to address the rumors, but why not squash them? And you saw what Mike Tomlin did with the USC rumors. He squashed it and sent you to hell, basically. Why not try to corner him? Because we all know he can't squash him because they're really involved in the talks. So he really can't. We can't. But maybe you can almost force him to a Saban point so you can really kind of corner him. How come guys haven't really, or women there in the press room, haven't really cornered him about this whole thing?
No, and that's a fair point. I think that the way the question would need to be asked would be, are you ready to commit to Tua as being your quarterback for the rest of the 2021 season?
And beyond, you got to say.
But that's not fair. I don't think you can go there. I think at the very least, he and Stephen Ross had the opportunity to squash it. Also yesterday at the owners' meetings, and he basically preemptively kind of like laughed it off and like, no, I'm not talking about it. I know what you want to talk about. I'm not talking about that. And my guess is, I don't know. I don't know if Flo is beating down the media to the point where it's almost we're expecting certain answers and therefore we don't ask questions. But yeah, it certainly would be a fair question to ask. Are you ready to commit to Tua, as your starter, to me at the very least through the end of the 2021 season?
So you're going to ask him that on Friday? Because no. he's going to dodge you on Thursday. That's for sure. Because he's not talking on Thursdays now, right?
He doesn't talk on Thursdays anymore. Correct.
Convenience. So Friday we can hold your feet to the fire. You're gonna corner him.
I make no promises, but I will take it under advisement.
I mean, I just I want him to shit or get off the pot, dude. That's all. Just do it, bro. Because I kind of compared it to what happened to me my last year at QAM earlier on the show. I knew for 11 months, Alan, that I was getting fired. For 11 months, I knew it. It's not a fun thing to walk into work knowing that the guy that's at the top is going to eliminate your salary at the end of the year. And the difference between me and Tua is they never replaced me, because all they've done at 560 and 790 is just get rid of people, but they're not bringing anything in. They got less and less and less is what they're doing. You know what I mean? Like, right, they just switched 790 to all gambling now. There are no live shows on there anymore. So I understand that part, but it's not, let me tell you, man, 11 months of walking into that building, knowing that the asshole at the top doesn't like you or has to eliminate your salary, whatever it is, dude, that's not a fun feeling to be in for Tua.
No, I understand that. But again, it's not like he hasn't had many opportunities to take it upon himself to go beyond Tua as our starting quarterback, and to add, we're committed to him long term. It's not a big step for him to say that at all. And he's had multiple and multiple opportunities to do it, and they refuse to do it. And why do they refuse to do it? Well, pretty obvious, because they're still interested in pulling something off with Deshaun Watson before the trade deadline next Tuesday. And that's why, you know, even if you hold his feet to the fire and, okay, commit one way or the other, chances are you're not gonna get, if we haven't gone by now, we're committed to Tua as a long-term starter. We need to stop with all that speculation about us making a trade for the quarterback. There's no reason to believe that that would change.
Man, that is just, to me, do you think it's has it affected the locker room at all? Because it's not like they've shown that kind of, you know, open support in a way. The players didn't vote him for captain, which is not completely out of place for a young guy like that. But still, it's just, if your coaching staff and front office are already moving on, it's hard for the players he's playing with to look at him and say, no, yeah, you're our leader. You know what I mean? That's a really difficult situation they've put him in.
No, that's fair. But I would take exception with your point about that it's not unusual for a young quarterback to not be a captain, because I did the research, and if memory serves, there were 27 teams that named season captains as opposed to game by game. And out of those 27, only two teams did not have their quarterback as one of their captains, and it was the Dolphins and it was the Patriots with Mac Jones. But there were a lot of other rookie quarterbacks, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Zach Wilson, I believe, was a captain. And second-year quarterbacks were named captains. So that doesn't apply to me. I do think it was a big deal. But then again, if all the scuttlebutt is your team's trying to replace a guy, trying to go get Deshaun Watson, it's understandable that guys might be hesitant to make this guy their captain. I do think it has some kind of, like, intangible effect. But how much that plays into what's going on the field, yeah, I'm not so sure about that. I'm not a
no, on the field. I don't believe it affects that much. But no, in the locker either. Room, his command of things, you know, guys are looking at him like, "Yo, dude, you're not even gonna be here next month." You know what I mean? It's like, so it's, you know, can Tua call somebody out? You know what I mean? Will they respond, or they'll look at him like, "Yo, dude, you're not gonna be here next year." So, you know. I don't care what you think, you know, that.
No. And then you hear all those comments like coming out of training camp from some of my media colleagues about Tua really emerging as a leader and all that. So it was like, dude, the guy's a quarterback and he's running the offense. So yeah, there has to be some kind of leadership. Cause yeah. if you're like a wallflower and never say anything, you can't be a quarterback. So that was kind of obvious. That was kind of overplayed. The bottom line is the only thing he can do, and this cliche city here, but is control what he can control and ball out on Sundays. He had a very efficient performance against Atlanta on Sunday. I'm going to tell you here, I'm going to probably piss you off, but I don't think it was breathtakingly spectacular like a lot of people are making it out to be, because everything was short. The pass protection was very good, but what he did very well. He was very efficient. And all he can do is keep stacking games like this, you know, until he's no longer the starting quarterback, whenever that may be.
When we look at this situation with Watson, have you been able to ask around? I know you're not going to get public comments, but behind the scenes, are they worried at all about the PR nightmare that it could cause? You have your section of Neanderthal fans that they're always only going to care about football and what can you do for my team. And I don't care if you're murdering people out in your, you know, off time. We have that section of fans, but there's going to be a large section of fans that are going to feel uneasy about this. Women, female fans, I would imagine, are going to be pretty creepy about this. Sponsors, I wonder what they're going to feel about this. I'm just wondering, have you done any homework on that side of what it could do to the environment? Because whether he's innocent or he's guilty, he's still kind of creepy. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just wondering what's the feeling going to be if they do acquire him from all kinds of different people that are tied to this organization.
Okay, well, a couple of things here. Number one, you make a very good point. And as the father of a daughter, as you are, I wouldn't want him anywhere near me, anywhere near my daughter. Having said that, we have to understand, and you've talked about the Neanderthal outlook out there. And unfortunately, what he's being accused of in terms of the fans, sponsors, advertisers, and all that, I would tell you is a lot less egregious than, oh, God forbid, Colin Kaepernick taking a knee during the national anthem.
possible sexual assault. Not as bad as taking a knee.
Am I wrong? I'm saying that's what it is. It's completely outrageous, but that's the truth. And then we look at other situations, and this is why I've kind of steered clear of taking a moral high ground, because yeah, what he's accused of is completely disgusting. If there's truth to it, he should be out of the NFL for a long, long time, if not forever. But then again, if we're going to start doing that, I mean, hell, I don't see Kansas City fans having an issue with Tyreek Hill, who punched his pregnant girlfriend while he was in college.
Right.
Which to me is kind of just as vile, if I don't want to say more, but it's kind of in the same ballpark of vileness.
It's disgusting. It's another level of disgusting. Right.
It's completely disgusting. So to me, I can, in nature of fans, I think, yeah, there'll be a PR hit. But how long does it last? Does it last until Watson throws four touchdowns against New England or against an opponent like that? And then, oops, all of a sudden it's all forgotten. So right or wrong, that's the way I see it. And I'm not making a judgment on it. I'm just telling you that I think that's pretty much the way it is.
All right. So let me run a totally Oliver Stone thing on your ass here. Okay.
Love it. Love it. Bring it.
I'm going to throw you completely, because it's, and I'm not saying this is what's happening, but I'm just saying the optics of it is kind of what, you know, we're seeing here. Okay, in a normal world, I'm going to walk you through a normal world, okay?
Okay.
And I'm not saying that we need to make changes and fire people. I have not gotten to that point, even though I am livid with Flo right now and all the weird-ass decisions and things that he's done this year. Like, he's got me, like, completely lost. But I still don't want him fired. I want him to save his damn job and kick ass here in the next 10 weeks. And I want Greer to save his job. But normally,
okay,
you are the GM. You hire a coach. The coach can't find the right assistant coaches. He's constantly firing. You come up to your third year with expectations. You absolutely flop. A lot of your picks are not playing well. A lot of the people you paid a lot of money to are not playing well. The quarterback apparently has not convinced the coaching staff or the ownership. Normally, in a normal world, when you're 1-6 and probably headed to a 3-win season, everybody gets shit canned. Normally. You mean you drafted a quarterback at 5 and you've given up on him a year later? Get out of here. That's normally what happens. Yet, Barry Jackson reports that everybody's feeling safe about their jobs. And I'm glad, because I hope they do survive. But it's still weird that you wouldn't hear about all of that. And so now let's nonchalant move over to Watson. And I know what people all say. Ross makes no decisions. Ross doesn't pressure anybody. But I have a hard time believing that you're just going to easily go over everything that's not working, schemes, players, salaries, quarterback, everything, picks, all of that, and you're going to give up more picks for a player with a shady reputation to try to bail you out. I have a hard time believing that Tua was solely the selection of Greer and Flo now. Like, I don't – It's so weird that you would just gloss over everything and say, yeah, everybody's safe. We're just going to add Watson and we're just going to move on and we'll try to fix it from here on out. Dude, normally you get blown out for stuff like this. I'm just saying. So it's really weird how all of this is just going to transition the way we're talking. And if it really is like that, then I have a hard time believing that Tua was only their selection. I'm just saying.
Oh, I don't think you're off the mark there. There's been a lot of scuttlebutt out there that Stephen Ross had his kind of his imprint on that pick. And you know, the big story that's floated around was in 2018. Stephen Ross kind of suggested, hey, how about we trade back from 12 and take Lamar Jackson later in the first round. And he was basically vetoed, and the Dolphins took Minka Fitzpatrick, who was a terrific pick. Hell of a player. This is a black mark on Flores' resume, the fact that he couldn't make it work and they wound up having to trade him. That's beside the point.
By the way, if they don't know how to build around Tua, they wouldn't have known how to build around Lamar Jackson.
Okay, but here's my point.
We must give the Ravens and their front office and coaching staff an enormous amount of credit that they are severely disciplined to build the team that Lamar needs in order to succeed. So let's give them credit for that, because I think Lamar would have failed miserably in a lot of other teams and a lot of other situations. I'm just saying.
Had people not been intelligent enough to see what kind of quarterback he needs to be in the NFL. Okay, but here's my point, though, to my bigger point. So the Dolphins bypassed Lamar Jackson, and in 2019, the entire league and Stephen Ross watches Lamar Jackson be named NFL MVP when he completely blows up the league. So 2020 comes around, and if Stephen Ross had a jonesing for Tua Tagovailoa, we're actually not thinking that maybe he pushed harder than he pushed for Lamar Jackson after seeing what happened with Jackson. And like I said, and there's been a lot of scuttlebutt that Stephen Ross really wanted Tua. And again, based on what happened with Lamar Jackson, it certainly would make sense for him to have said, listen, guys, I bowed to you on Lamar Jackson. Let's get Tua this time. And as far as point number two, as far as the idea of keeping the regime, to me, it all boils down to Brian Flores and Chris Greer, because I consider them a tandem. I don't believe that Chris Greer makes personnel decisions without Flo, at the very least, his stamp of approval. That's at the very least.
You're 1,000% right. You're not speculating. You're not guessing. Nothing. They are a tandem. There's no doubt about it.
So to me, you get rid of both of them or you keep both of them. And the thing is, last year, in the second year of a rebuild, quicker than anybody thought, boom, they're 10-6 and they're in playoff contention, controlling their playoff fate heading into the last game of the season. And that, to me, built them a lot of equity. So I can absolutely understand why they're still around, and I can still understand why they would still be around after the end of the season if the Dolphins make some kind of a little move and win some games and become very competitive every week. But and the flip side, of course, if things continue to go south and the Dolphins finish 2-15 or 3-14, then obviously all bets are off, and then I think we easily could see a change.
Yeah, I mean, but again, if there is no change and you're making the trade, I'm just going to say, wow, there's more to this story. I don't know what it is.
Of course.
But there's something going on here. And, you know, when you keep telling me somebody's in charge and they're really not in charge, I just keep getting frustrated with all of that, because then you just, when there's so many chefs in the damn kitchen, you know, I just find it's a very nonchalant way, the way they're moving. This isn't like the Rosen pick, or this is the number 5 overall pick in the damn draft. And in a freaking year, you've just moved on.
But no, but again, Big O, you're missing the point.
I almost get the feeling like Flo and Greer are going, all right, Steve, we gave you your shot. You see, he can't play. We got to move on. And they're like,
Sorry, Big O. No, sorry, Big O. I'm going to have to disagree with you here. It's not that Tua can't play. And I don't believe that the Dolphins think that for a second. Okay. It's that they look at Tua, and again, remember the term I used for his game Sunday was very efficient. And based on his physical attributes, to me, I don't know how much higher he can get than that. Okay. Whereas, so in a best case scenario, maybe he becomes a top 15 quarterback in the NFL and you need parts around him or you're not getting anywhere. Whereas Deshaun Watson is a bona fide, let's say, top five quarterback.
Yeah.
Where his issues are cleared up and you can be a contender with him year after year just because of how good of a quarterback is and settling that position. If you remember the introductory press conference,
if you have the team. If not, you can throw 4,800 yards and 33 touchdowns and 7 interceptions, and you win 4 games.
Except I'm going to tell you this. You need a whole lot less pieces around Deshaun Watson than you do around Tua.
You still need an offensive line around Deshaun Watson. Any quarterback you have, you will need an offensive line around Deshaun Watson.
You mean like Tua had on Sunday, which was perfectly acceptable, perfectly fine.
Yeah, for short passes, not for long.
I'm sorry. Look back at the game. I watched. I rewatched.
Yeah,
that
game, there's a
and
couple.
He had plenty of time to throw the pass. He was pressured, maybe a handful of time. I'm not buying this constant dumping on the offensive line, even after a game when they actually played pretty well. I mean, let's give them some credit.
The way you go into that game and every game right now for the Dolphins is that you got to get rid of this football quickly until over a length of time they prove that they can hold for a while. Then you can start going on the deep end and taking deep shots, which, by the way, they don't have a lot of players anyways that can actually do that except for Waddle right now.
And you also don't have a quarterback who throws the ball downfield very well.
No, you do have a quarterback. The problem is you don't have a running game and you don't have proper receivers to do some of the things that you need to do. But if you get that offensive line working where they actually can give the kid confidence and he can sit back there and really wait, then, yeah, he can play the game. I think he can't do – he threw deep in Alabama, dude, but he had linemen in Alabama.
He had 5 seconds to throw every time. But, again, Tua needs more help around him than Deshaun Watson, and it's not even close.
That's the point
I'm trying to make to you.
If
the Dolphins have Pro Bowlers at every position on offense, yeah, Tua's going to be great.
No.
But that's not reality.
He's not going to need Pro Bowlers on every position, but he does need an offensive line. I think he can work with everything else that they have if you give him an offensive line and a running game. He gets that.
And like I said, they had 430 yards against the Falcons, so obviously – the offensive line did some things right. And again, I've been dumping on the offensive line as much as anybody. I absolutely hate the fact that they're getting zero credit for what they did Sunday.
Yeah, well, we'll see this week what the offensive line does instead of facing a Falcon team with no pass rush and is absolutely terrible. Now,
Big O, hold on. If this
week Tua drops back with a lot of time to pass, then you're right.
Okay, Big O. And mentioned that the Atlanta has a horrible secondary. So if you're going to attribute the good performance of the offensive line because they played against a garbage defense, then is it not fair to say that, well, Tua succeeded and played that well because he played against that garbage defense?
Yeah, no,
I mean,
it's not just Tua.
It's part of it.
It's part of his success that he played against a bad defense,
obviously,
this week. But it's a bad team. He played against two bad teams the last 2 weeks.
Correct.
So the offensive line was a little better. The running game was a little better. They used it. They used more of a passing running game in 2 weeks ago. This week, they were able to actually run the ball. Now, this week against Buffalo, if the line can give them time, then I think you can actually be somewhat competitive. If they can't give them any time and they can't run the ball, then you've got no shot in hell. Right?
True.
So we will find out this week if the line truly has made some progress. Because I've watched Tua play all right at times, like against Arizona, good defense.
He had a very good game.
So there are moments and very weak weapons, by the way, in the process while you're doing this. So if this kid actually had some support, I think Drew Brees always had support, dude. That's all I'm saying. Treat him like you treated Drew Brees. Give him the damn line and everything else in a running game And I think everything else works out. You know what I'm saying?
And so I'm clear on this. I am not suggesting that Tua can become a good quality NFL quarterback. I just think the line between him and Deshaun Watson is very, very clear.
Right. And you don't think he can be elite, is what you're saying. That's all. Right. Yeah, That's what you're saying. You're saying he doesn't have the athleticism to be elite.
And arm strength.
Yeah, and arm strength. Right. That's what I mean in athleticism and all that. Okay. That's fine. But what's the arm strength difference between Tua and Joe Montana and Tua and Drew Brees and Tua and Fran Tarkenton? You know what I mean? And Tua and Chad Pennington, although Chad had more size than all these guys that I just mentioned, but plenty of guys have had his kind of arm strength and succeeded in the history of football. You're old enough like I am to have seen all those guys I talked about.
You're talking outliers, and Fran Tarkenton doesn't apply because Fran Tarkenton can run like a running back.
Well, no, he was a scrambler. I guess.
Correct.
He was a scrambler. Correct. I get. Well, but Tua can scramble a little bit. He can run around, dude. He makes people miss.
He's not Fran Tarkenton.
He's not Fran or Roger the Dodger. I get that.
Okay. So we're back to Montana and Brees. That's two out of how many quarterbacks?
Montana too. Exactly.
I said Montana and Brees. So you're talking two out of how many quarterbacks? You're hoping he becomes that guy. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying it's probably not likely.
I know.
Whereas I know what I'm getting in Deshaun Watson if the Dolphins make the trade.
But you're being unfair on the Tarkenton thing. It's still the same arm. Whether Tarkenton scrambled a little bit more to make the play, the arm strength for Fran Tarkenton and Tua, it's the same thing, dude. There's no difference in arm strength. That's it.
I understand that, except right? that Fran Tarkenton made a lot of things happen with his legs more than yes. Tua can. Yeah, okay, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Staubach did the same thing. Yeah, he was. He also did his share of dancing around a little bit. We could call Tarkenton the poor man's Kyler Murray.
True. Yeah, very, very poor man. Very poor man.
Very poor man's Kyler Murray. Although I mean, Tarkenton was a really good passer. He was very accurate.
Sure, he was very accurate. Yeah.
So I got to give him credit there. I'll give him props. What are you picking this week? A massacre?
No, yeah, it's. I mean, it's hard to not go with a massacre. Actually, no, I actually do think that the Dolphins will keep it competitive for a while, but then at some point, I mean, look, the game last year in the season finale with Josh Allen and the regulars in the lineup, the Dolphins actually led 7-0 after the first quarter, and then it completely went south. So, I do see the possibility of the Dolphins hanging in there for a while. I just don't think in the long run they have enough to pull off the upset.
Follow him on Twitter at Poopart NFL and catch his exceptional work there at Sports Illustrated. Every Dolphin should bookmark that page. Alan, thank you, my brother. Appreciate you. Much love.
You got it. We'll talk to you post game.
You got it. There you go. It's good to see that he's feeling better too, like that.